Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, December 30th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gandhi.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Zimbabwe revives the feared National Youth Service ahead of the crucial 2018 national elections.
The National Youth Service was a complete failure in the human rights disaster, primarily because of the way in which it was extremely politicized.
Zimbabwe is only left with a few weeks' supply of maize, and grain millers say the government should lift a ban on the private importation of the staple grain to avert a crisis.
In June last year, we made recommendations to the Honorable Minister of Agriculture and saying that the shortfall of 800,000 was just too much a future for us to import from one country. We needed to open up all borders.
And Zimbabwe orders top health officials to prepare for a crippling doctors' strike.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
Youth Development, Indigenization and Empowerment Minister Patrick Juwao has caused an uproar in Zimbabwe after vowing yesterday to revitalize the controversial National Youth Service Program. The Opposition Movement for Democratic Change and People's Democratic Party and some human rights groups have raised serious concerns over Juwao's plans coming ahead of the 2018 general elections and the factional fights in the ruling ZANU-PF as the battle to succeed President Robert Mugabe intensifies.
The youths have been accused of terrorizing innocent Zimbabweans with claims that they normally force people to buy ZANU-PF cards. Juwao said he is mobilizing 80,000 young people to help in national development programs. Human rights lawyer Dewama Vinga tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that Juwao's move is very disturbing.
Well, it shows clearly that Mr. Juwao has no idea of what is important or essential or a priority for Zimbabwe. The National Youth Service was a complete failure in the human rights disaster, primarily because of the way in which it was extremely politicized and highly partisan as an appendage of ZANU-PF. So to revive it is simply to look at a political party project and not any national interest that can come out of the National Youth Service.
We also understand that there are 10,000 youths on the government payroll. What is your take on this?
These have nothing to do with the development of the country. These are, you know, party youth, effectively and primarily. So what these people are talking about is a political project to mobilize people and also to abuse these youth to terrorize citizens. So it is a project that does not augur well for human rights and that should be disbanded. In fact, this is an area that urgently needs an audit from the finance ministry to remove these individuals who are not benefiting the nation at all, but are milking, you know, the meager resources that we have as a nation.
And that was human rights lawyer Dewama Vinga, a senior researcher with Human Rights Watch, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Johannesburg, South Africa.
Zimbabwe is only left with a few weeks' supplies of maize, and grain millers have appealed to acting President Phelekezela Mpoko to lift a ban on the private importation of the staple grain. The Grain Millers Association of Zimbabwe says hardest-hit Matabeleland region has only a week's supply of grain reserves, while some parts of the countries have stocks only enough to last 2 months. Agricultural Minister Joseph Made, who was not reachable for a comment, was in July quoted as saying Zimbabwe was importing the 780,000 metric tons of maize from Zambia that would see the country through to next year. The Grain Millers Association says last week the country had only 248,000 metric tons of maize against a monthly requirement of 150,000 tons.
Zimbabwe controls maize imports because it does not want genetically modified maize in the country. Zambia, which recorded a surplus of maize this year, had offered to sell maize to Zimbabwe, but the offer was not taken. Indications are that Zambia has now banned maize exports, leaving the millers to look up to South America, since South Africa, which has helped Zimbabwe in the past, also recorded low harvest this year because of poor rainfall. Chairman of the Grain Millers Association of Zimbabwe, Tafazwa Musarara, tells Studio 7 they are hoping that acting President Mpoko will instruct Minister Made to lift the ban so that they can import maize from South America.
In June last year, we made recommendations to the Honorable Minister of Agriculture and saying that the shortfall of 800,000 was just too much a figure for us to import from one country. We needed to open up all borders, which include Bay Bridge, Plumtree, Machipanda, Chorond, and others. And we also needed to take positions on maize and procure it from South Africa and Brazil and Argentina. But regrettably, the minister refused.
What were the minister's reasons?
No reasons were advanced. And we feel that infringe on our administrative justice rights, that an organ of the state, such as the Ministry of Agriculture, failed to give reasons and also does not do the proper thing. I mean, everyone is important. The issue of shortage has nothing to do with the ruling party or the president. It's a climatic phenomenon.
And we also understand that you have appealed to the acting vice president, Mr. Pelekezela Mpoko. What is the situation now?
Well, we have appealed to the vice president and we await his response. The Zambian government has now put an export ban on any maize that is bought from its parastatal, which is called Food Reserve Agency. So you cannot buy maize from Zambia and export it, or buy maize from FRIA millet and export the products to Zimbabwe. Now, this is, of course, due to the precarious stocks levels. The current heat waves, which are ravaging all southern Africa, are not making it any better. The Zambians now are expecting a deficit in 2016. So they have to take precautionary measures of imposing an export ban.
We understand that you are supposed to pay an amount of $2,000 in order to be issued with a permit. Is it not this issue that's stopping you from importing the maize?
No. Listen, we are going to import close to 400,000 tons. 400,000 tons, we are talking of $160 million. So we can pay for that amount. That is not a problem.
And we also... that was Tafazwa Musarara, chairman of the Grain Millers Association of Zimbabwe. He spoke with Studio 7 on the line from Harare.
Ordinary Zimbabweans have slammed the first family for going on holiday in the Far East, while most of them are unable to enjoy the festive season as they have either not been paid December salaries or have no money to do so due to the prevailing harsh economic environment. Our correspondent Ivan Chifera reports from Harare.
Most Zimbabweans have described President Robert Mugabe and his wife Grace as irresponsible, saying going on holiday abroad when the majority of the population is wallowing in poverty showed they did not care about struggling local people. Harare resident Moses Chungwa said it was unfair for the president to go outside the country when people are suffering.
How can you go to for a holiday while this country is suffering? It's not good for us.
Another local resident, Andrew Piri, said it was unacceptable of the president to go abroad, especially after he had acknowledged at a party he held for senior government officials that the economic situation in the country was not good. He said while the president is entitled to an annual holiday, he should enjoy it locally, given the prevailing economic situation in the country.
Locally, there are so many resort areas where he can even enjoy with his family than to carry a biggest contingent of about 200 people going to the Far East. It seems as if he is having a holiday in the Far East and carrying his friends to go and buy their groceries from the Far East using the government's coffers. We can say the civil servants that we are crying right now. They've never received their monies. The Christmas was just dull.
John Moyo, also of Harare, said the timing of the president's holiday to the Far East was wrong, given that most people in the country are suffering and did not enjoy Christmas holidays.
The economy is on its knees. The country is almost cash dry. I'm sure the president could have remained in the country, though on leave, attending to some of the urgent issues like civil servants' salaries, civil servants' bonuses. But when the leader of a nation chooses to go out and enjoy himself with his family, I see it as being very, very arrogant.
But political commentator and Great Zimbabwe University lecturer Joel Makusha said there was nothing wrong with the president's leave as long as it was budgeted for. He said it was proper for President Mugabe to go on leave so that he comes back rejuvenated to deal with the many challenges affecting the nation. His views were echoed by ZANU-PF Central Committee member and parliamentarian Joseph Chuma, who said the president has a right to go on holiday even if some civil servants have not yet been paid.
But the point is that even if he's here, are they going to be paid because he's here? That's the fundamental question that you must ask yourself. The responsible minister is running around mobilizing resources so that all civil servants are paid. And so it doesn't really need the president to be in office, I mean, for that to happen.
Chuma noted that the government is still functioning in the absence of President Mugabe.
The president is actually human, and it is important to know that every human being goes on leave. While he goes on leave, it doesn't mean that then government is functioning. That is why in his place is an acting president, which means that it's business as usual and nothing stops. If ever there is need for him to come, he's always a phone call away. So I don't know why people must make a fuss about it, as if the president has gone to Mars or the moon or something. If ever the president is needed physically, I'm sure he would leave whatever he's doing and come back and attend to whatever needs to be attended. I remember ourselves in Parliament, we were once adjoined, but because there was need for us to convene, we were urgently called and we left whatever we're doing and we actually convened and we dealt with the business of the day that was required of us. So it is the same scenario even with the president. If he's needed, he will always come back.
Mr. Mugabe traditionally takes his leave during this time of the year and usually spends it in the Far East, where he also goes for medical checkups. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Meanwhile, the government has ordered top health officials to make contingent plans to ensure that all hospital critical areas are adequately staffed following threats of an industrial action by unpaid doctors and nurses. Doctors said this week they'll be downing their tools together with nurses if the government fails to pay them December salaries this Friday. Reacting to the threat, Health Secretary Brigadier General Dr. Gerald Gwinji wrote a letter yesterday to hospital chief executives and medical doctors, ordering them to make sure that hospitals are open next week. The letter reads in part, quote, "All institutions are required to provide support for health workers in critical areas by providing transport or bus fare," end of quote. Dr. Gwinji and Health Minister David Parire Nyatwa were not available for comment.
Hello, I'm Demiake Mwakalielie with Studio 7. Tell us how you are. Are you hopeful about 2016? Send us your audio and video messages on WhatsApp. You may receive a radio and calendar just for doing so. Remember to include your address when you send us the messages. Our number is 1-202-465-318. Again, 1-202-465-0318. We're also on Facebook.
Thank you to those of you who responded and sent us your festive season greetings. Here are some of the messages.
Oh, hi. My name is Nick Mangwana. I'm Zimbabwean based in London. I would like to say a special thank you to all those Zimbabweans in the diaspora, in every corner of the world, who made it happen for Zimbabweans at home. We know you sent your Christmas, you gave them Christmas, all those that are having a few problems in acquiring and accessing presents and money. A lot flowed from the diaspora towards Zimbabwe. A special thank you to you. Happy New Year. We hope 2016 will bring a more prosperous Zimbabwe, a better livelihood, and better prospects for everybody. Thank you so much.
We want to hear from you out there, so please send us your audio and video messages on WhatsApp. We will give out some calendars and radio receivers to those who send us these messages. And so please include your address when you send us the messages. Our number is 1-202-465-318. That number again, 1-202-465-0318. We're also on Facebook, so please don't forget to like our page.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metom Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up
this evening, we are talking to a Zimbabwean teaching in the United States.
And drivers urged to exercise caution on Zimbabwe's roads.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Voters went to the polls in the Central African Republic today in a much-delayed election that many hope will end 3 years of violence in the troubled country.
And prosecutors in the United States of Pennsylvania have brought criminal charges against comedian Bill Cosby over the alleged sexual assault of a woman in 2004.
A new opinion poll suggests that Americans place a higher priority on protecting the rights of Christians than that of other religious groups. And in our diaspora forum today, United States-based educator Pete Ngobo, who hails from rural Cholocho, says his upbringing in his village has been the best preparation for his journey from Zimbabwe to the United States. Ngobo, who is now a high school math teacher in the U.S. state of Maryland, has made his educational footprints at the University of Zimbabwe, Oxford University in the United Kingdom, and Georgetown University right here in the States. Ngobo calls himself a rural boy at heart, says he has been privileged to impact his communities at home and abroad through his teachings. He speaks with reporter Tatenda Gumbo.
I got through to the United States via England, so I'll go back to Zimbabwe. I used to work as a book publisher for one book publisher. And then while I was there, I got a scholarship actually to go and do a master's degree in publishing at Oxford Brookes University in England. So that was actually in 2007. That's when I left the country. And while I was in England, I won another internship at the World Bank here in Washington, D.C. And that was in 2008. That was the first time I got to America. And then once I was here, as they always say, one thing led to another. Mm-hmm. And finally, I found myself coming back as a permanent resident of the U.S.
Mm-hmm. And of course, you are a teacher for high school and you're teaching math. Let's talk about the cultural space that you're in when you work with your students. You know, how is it for you as a teacher?
Actually, I'm one of the lucky teachers because I work in a very cultural diverse area. But before I worked there, I used to work for another school where 99% of our population was African American, and also the same thing with staff, which was kind of a different environment altogether, linguistically, culturally. A lot of things were very, very different, and I think that was a learning curve for me, you know, Of course, most of the time, obvious people expect we had behavior issues, and indeed we did have. But we also had students who were so interesting, who were fascinated with Africa, not in a negative way. Mm-hmm. There were kids who really wanted to learn more about Africa, just asking me the questions, and I was sharing certain pictures for them about Africa, and they were kind of appreciative. And of course, on the other end, it was the first time to meet students who are really, really challenging, and, you know, and they say their mind literally, you know, whatever is on in their mind, they would say it. So that was different from home.
Mm-hmm. And I think, as you're pointing out, a lot of African immigrants always talk about the difference in classroom structure from when they were growing up. You know, I grew up here in America, but I remember being in Zimbabwe. And when I first got here, you know, seeing how the kids interacted with the teachers, and it was very different in the sense of, you know, there wasn't that structure to say, okay, this is the teacher, you're the student. Can you talk about that?
I think one of the things, it comes from the educational philosophy. I think back home, sometimes teachers are demigods. And I know people won't like that statement, but the teacher knows everything. The teacher tells everyone what to do. And our world system tends to be teacher-centered. Even when we do group work at home, the teacher probably will tell you, you sit with this one, you do this one. Whilst that has an advantage of maintaining certain structure, it, however, does not allow students to grow, which is the difference here. Most of the things are student-oriented. Mm-hmm. So the teacher, most of the time, you facilitate, you tell them, today we are doing this. I know I have spoken about slope intercept. It's my favorite topic, and I happen to be teaching it when schools open. So the thing is, when you come in, yes, there may be that moment when I'm doing what is called direct instruction, the teacher teaching and saying the things. But just after, for 10 minutes, you start to remove yourself and allow students to work as a group. And as you say, even the sitting arrangement, the teacher is not always in front. And when I was training to be a teacher here in America, I was told something interesting. I was told that a teacher can teach from anywhere in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And the eyes will follow you.
And since we've been talking, you brought up a good point that I think is wonderful, that you are a rural boy, and that no matter where you are in the world, you always go back to your rural upbringing. Can you talk about that and how, you know, that has impacted your work to this day?
Actually, the first time I remember was 1992. I finished grade 7 back home in the village. And I went to Bulawayo to start Form 1, which here in America would be like 8th grade.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the first thing that they said, they called us VK. And I've actually written a poem about that because I do write poems. And then VK meant Vele Kaya, mm-hmm. the one from the village, mm-hmm. you know. And to a certain point, I wanted to run away from my villageness. You know, it wasn't cool to be from Cholocho. And actually, I happened to be from Cholocho. And the teacher always said stuff about people from Cholocho. Oh, they do this. Oh, they steal. They are murderers. And you know, I wanted to be city. I wanted to talk about MacGyver, you know, wrestling, Shawn Michaels, you know. I didn't want to talk about Cholocho stuff. I mean, who does that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but as I became an adult, I started to realize how much blessed I am to have been brought up in the village. I've had the experience, and I remember this actually came strongly to me when I was in England. And I remember saying to myself, from Cholocho to Oxford. And I was talking to myself as I was walking in Oxford. And I said to myself, I should be proud. And I said to myself, why? I said, because Cholocho, the village, was able to prepare me for England.
And moving forward, looking at your journey to where you are now, what is next for you? And also, you know, all the young students that you hope to affect in some way, be it here in the States or, of course, back home in rural Zimbabwe, in Cholocho, for example.
My role, I wish to advocate for rural Zimbabweans,
mm-hmm.
Whether it's in Zimbabwe or actually as I establish connections even at universities here in the US or in the UK, because I was also a student there. I want to say to them, please consider those who went to rural schools. When people apply for scholarships, check which school they went to. Try to talk to them about Cholocho High School. It's kind of, that is completely different from Prince Edward High School in Harare. But it also produces a really grounded person who understands both sides of the life. And that's what I hope to do, a rural advocate.
That was United States-based educator Phithizela Ngcobo speaking in the studio with reporter Thathenda Gumbo.
Passenger Association of Zimbabwe President Tafadzwa George Goliath says commuters and motorists should exercise extreme caution as they travel during this New Year holiday. Goliath says his organization is disturbed by the number of people who have lost their lives between Christmas Eve and Boxing Day. Police reported that 27 people died while 47 were injured in road accidents during that short period. In an effort to deter motorists from breaking traffic regulations, Parliament last week approved an increase in fines for various traffic offences. The new fines will be effective on New Year's Day. Goliath tells Jonga Kandemiri it is worrisome that some commuters at times urge motorists to drive fast.
On the upcoming New Year, we are advising drivers to take caution on our road. As you know, we are in the rain season again. Our roads will be slippery. We are also advising passengers to actually speak out. If the driver is overspeeding, he should actually speak out. It will actually help to reduce carnage on the road. We are also urging our members to actually plead with our drivers to exercise single caution on the road, because what is more important is life.
What's your reaction to Parliament's decision to increase traffic offence fines?
It's in two ways. Sometimes it's good for us, the passengers or the drivers, because it will actually remind you that if we break the law, we'll pay for it, we'll be fined. It will also reduce the road carnage. Other people view it as something the government wants us to collect revenue out of it. That is just like a fundraiser, but it's not like that. Means they are trying to actually caution the driver.
What about the issue of corruption? Do you think this will fuel corruption?
The driver was trying to actually negotiate to pay a full fine to the police force on the road. I think so, because as you know that this country is facing economic problems.
That was Tafadzwa George Goliath, president of the Passenger Association of Zimbabwe, speaking with Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri from Harare.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts will be talking with listeners and experts about the grain situation in Zimbabwe amid reports that maize is running out.
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 and we'll call you right back from our studios.
And now to recap today's top stories.
Zimbabwe revives the feared National Youth Service ahead of the crucial 2018 national elections.
Zimbabwe is only left with a few weeks' supply of maize and grain. Millers say the government should lift a ban on the private importation of the staple grain to avert a crisis.
And Zimbabwe orders top health officials to prepare for a crippling doctor's strike.
That's our broadcast this evening. Join us at 7 every evening for news in three languages and visit us on the internet at www.studio7news.com. This is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye saying good night from Washington.